fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
That was the opening of Stuck on Stella by the composer Salvatore Martirano, and it was performed by Marc-André Hamelin. I'm Erica Wirth, and welcome to this Pianist podcast. Today I am speaking with Mark about his life in music, with a particular emphasis on his new album for Hyperion Records, which features the track you've just heard. Mark, it's lovely to have you on the Pianist podcast today.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's so great to have you here. I've known you for many, many years. But right now, I think the focus of this discussion was going to be about your new album. And with such an intriguing title, if ever there was one, Found Objects, Sound Objects. If you could maybe tell the listeners how you came up with such a title.
Well, it wasn't the first idea, actually. My original idea, and the one that it was a working title, really, was I'm almost embarrassed to say it, Mixtape. So Mark Hamelin's Mixtape. It didn't take too much time for people to convince me that it was a phrase, a sort of a moniker that was really maybe a little bit overused. Yes. And it didn't really completely describe, you know, what I was after, or what the album contents were about, was about. So I tried various things, but I finally settled on this title simply because the sort of a quasi alliteration, it was probably attractive, but also, well, I hope a little catchy as well. But I mean, every single piece, except for mine, of course, which finishes the album, was kind of a happy discovery. I mean, the things that I found along the way, which I really, really latched onto for one reason or another. And also the sound objects part really refers to the fact that every single piano, every single piece on the album uses the piano in very, very, very different ways and with very different purposes. So it's partly, I guess, a showcase of the pianistic possibilities and sound possibilities, you know, that you can derive from a piano.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's such a mixed bag of sound objects on here. And of course, John Cage's Perilous Night, which...
Oh, that's the most extreme. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that. I mean, that's for prepared piano, isn't it?
Yes, yes. And for listeners who are not familiar with the prepared piano as an instrument, I mean, it is a regular concert grand, which whose sound has been altered by inserting various objects in the strings, such as rubber, wood, metal, felt, and other things as well. And the invention of the prepared piano really can be traced back to John Cage, with some help from the American composer Henry Cowell. And Cage had he had been commissioned to write a music for a choreography involving a single dancer, and up to then he had been mostly writing music for percussion ensemble. But the theater in which this dance was going to be performed only had room really for a dancer and a piano. So it was a very small space. So, being the natural inventor that he was, he thought of a way perhaps to alter the piano sound to make it sound more like a percussion ensemble. And that's exactly what he did. So he ended up with something really sounding like a percussion ensemble in the control of the single player. So the invention of the prepared piano had a purely practical aim, actually, practical origin.
Yeah, I mean, it is quite, I can't say it would be for everybody's taste. I mean, ooh, convert me. Tell me what you see in it, why we should all listen to prepared piano.
Well, in this particular case, the genesis of the piece, I mean, the piece was written really at a time of great personal distress in Cage's life because his marriage was unraveling. And the music really reflects that. It's in six sections. It's one piece, but it's in six sections. So there's six different tracks on the album. And it really trails off at the end without any hope of resolution. So it should not be listened to as a nameless, emotionless percussion piece. I mean, there is really a lot of dramatic juice in it, I guess, if you want to
Yes.
put it
I
that
mean,
way.
what's interesting in your album on the album is just before that, you've had a very different type of piece in John Oswald's Tip, which is light-hearted. I mean, that is amazing. As you say, it's a medley of dozens of well-known pieces.
There are apparently something like 40 excerpts, many of which are repeated, actually. They occur again, like Fiorilisa and the Moonlight Sonata and whatnot. But well, John's way with music really is very interesting because he has this natural slant of mind that whenever he hears something, he thinks of a way to transform it. So a lot of his production has had to do with a transformation of existing material. But the thing is, the way that he transforms it, his imagination being what it is always ends up being truly, multidimensional, and it adds a lot of flavor. And I hate to use the word dimension again, but that's exactly what it is. One of the things that he did, one of the tracks for which he's famous, is that he took the first portion of Also sprach Zarathustra of Richard Strauss, which was used in 2001 A Space Odyssey, and everybody knows it. And went out and got all the recordings that he could find on CD, and he ended up with 24. And he takes that famous excerpt and plays them all together. He aligns the first trumpet note, and then just lets everybody go their own way. Of course, they're a different tempi and also slightly different intonation from one recording to another, and it ends up sounding like Ligeti.
Oh my goodness. And it's the whole piece?
No,
Or
just the introduction, the famous part.
okay. Oh my, I've got to listen to that. That's amazing.
I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere. I mean, it's easily found.
How interesting. Well, his tip is really interesting, and as you say, it's that word medley of over 40 pieces. Obviously they flow in and out in a very coherent manner.
Well, they're not only collage, but also very often superimposed. I mean, at one point you get the very beginning of the Goldberg Variations with the girl from Ipanema. And another instance, also the opening of the Goldbergs with the opening of the Rite of Spring. But the most hilarious part to me is when he combines the first movement of Beethoven's 111 with the Linus and Lucy music from P the Peanuts cartoons.
Oh my goodness.
You know
Yes.
the part.
Yes.
It's so well done. I would chuckle while playing it, and were it not so difficult. I mean, that's the one really, really tricky part of the whole piece.
Okay. I mean, there were.
In fact, when he first wrote it, it was actually unplayable because there were too many strands. So I had to simplify it a little bit with his approval, of course, with his complete
Oh,
approval.
okay. Wow. Yes, it does sound very hard, as does a lot of the repertoire on this album. And I'd like to now talk about your own composition. And I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Hexen Sabbat.
Hexensabbat, yeah, which just means witch's Sabbath in German.
Ah, yeah.
It has its origin in a sketch from many, many years ago. I think around the mid-80s, I think, and I was still at university, and I was very active, in trying to find my own voice, such as it is. This was one of the sketches. I mean, I have a regular habit of going back to older things and see if I can make something out of them, because I wrote down so many fragments in my past that never amounted to anything, that sometimes I get my ideas from that. And I mean, at the time, I really didn't have the mettle or the experience really to finish projects and develop them adequately. So with the passage of time now, I'm much more well equipped to make something out of these things. So that's what happened here. And in the back of my mind, I always had the very last part of the Berlioz Symphonie Fantastique,
Yes.
with the Ronde du Sabbat, the Sabbath dance. And I also had the idea to use also what Berlioz used, which is a good use of the dies irae. But in my case, the dies irae is used towards the end of the piece in the superimposition. I mean, there's three of them at the same time at different speeds.
Yes.
And that's really the trickiest part of the whole piece. And I spent a lot of time working on it.
I think it's an amazing piece, and the climax, I mean, it just builds, to a great climax. I mean, it is
Well,
fantastic.
I loved the end, especially in the recording session, because the piano allowed me to build up sound in a way that I probably never experienced before.
What do you mean by that? What
Well,
do you
just the accumulation of volume, and intensity,
Yes.
without actually becoming violent. I reached the top, in quadruple forte, and I found that I could still build it up for a few bars, and that was
Amazing.
exciting.
And that's because of that's the instrument itself, the
Well,
steinway that
yeah,
you yeah.
partly.
Yeah. No, it's amazing and it keeps going. It's a very dramatic piece. I think it's fantastic.
Well, good.
Really, really
Maybe I
fantastic.
should publish it.
Maybe you've published quite a few. I mean, you've composed throughout your career. I mean, a lot of concert pianists don't. Did you feel that this was part of you b as being a musician? You just knew you had to compose as well as be a
I've always had the urge from the, I mean, this is insignificant really, but from the very beginning, when I started piano lessons at age five, my dad, who was a very good amateur pianist, had scores lying around, Chopin, Liszt, I mean, especially those Liszt things. I mean, I grew up with the Peters edition, edited by Emil von Zara. It was very impressive visually for a little boy, so he had some music paper lying around, and I wanted to do the same thing, of course, but scribbling a whole lot of nonsense for many, 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 many years. But the impulse was always there. And at the beginning, I admit that I was writing mostly for myself to play, but in recent years, I've become much, much more interested in writing for others. For example, Hexen Sabbat, this piece, I haven't played it in public yet, but it was written to be premiered by somebody else. There's
Oh,
a young Israeli
Yoav,
pianist named Yoav Levanon. Do you know him?
Yes, absolutely. I've heard him. Yes, absolutely. A great virtuoso and a very
So this piece was he premiered it as part of a concert which was actually broadcast by Medici. So you could probably still see it.
Okay.
Yeah, and he really was a hit with the audience with the piece. He really gave it
Amazing.
his all.
Wow. So you haven't performed it. Wait, until now for the recording.
The recording, yes, but I haven't played in public, no.
And do you think you will?
Maybe. But as I said, I get more fulfillment to by seeing what others can do with what I've done.
That's so amazing. One of the things that I find so fascinating about you and your musical life is you like to collaborate with others, you play with quartets, and it's a big part of your musical life. And I believe now you formed a duo with Charles Richard Amelin, same surname. How did that come about?
We met actually something like maybe 10 years ago for the first time. We were introduced and we really hit it off. And, from a purely PR standpoint, people are intrigued by the fact that we have the same last name. He really would be an Amelin, except that he also he hyphenated it with his mother's last name, but his father's name is Amelin. I think that promoters were very attracted to the idea, so we were sort of pitted together. But we had actually been following each other's careers for quite some time, and so there's a mutual admiration society sort of going on there, I guess. I'm sorry if it sounds self-aggrandizing. I mean, I don't mean it to be, but so we tried it out, and we found that we really click. There's a good mix of or a good agreement between us of musical vision,
Okay.
so it really worked from the start, I think. And we have a program that's I think quite interesting, and it mixes the unfamiliar with the familiar. It starts with the Mozart Sonata. This is a two piano program, not a duet. So Mozart Sonata, Chopin Rondo, interval. Then we each play a solo piece. In his case, it's the Chopin A minor waltz, oops, 34 number two, I think it is. And I play a CPE Bach Rondo. Then we play Mettner's two pieces for two pianos, the Russian Round Dance and Knight Errant, and then we finish with the Grainger Fantasy on Porgy and Bess.
That's amazing. I don't know the Mettner. I don't know the Mettner.
The Russian Round Dance, he actually recorded himself with Moiseevich, and Knight Errant is actually a full-fledged sonata allegro, so.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, rechalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's quite a substantial piece. Both of them, I think, very, very attractive.
How wonderful. I look forward to hopefully going to one of these concerts with Charles.
We have played in a variety of locales, even in Japan, actually. But these upcoming concerts are confined to various venues in Canada. But we haven't said our last word.
Okay. I mean, one thing I'm amazed is how you just rip through the repertoire. I mean, you learn so much. I mean, I have to ask, you must be a very quick learner.
I have been, though, with age, it's not quite as easy as it once has been, which is perhaps a good thing because I think I'm now maybe a little less, I don't want to use the word superficial, because I've always taken everything I do very seriously, but it's just a little slower. And I have to admit, I have gotten to be quite a bit more comfortable if I have my iPad in front of me.
I noticed, yeah.
And if you know to use the iPad well, of course you have to know the music as well as you can, but just the fact that the iPad is there for reference is comforting. And
Yes.
it takes a lot of the worry away from the
Well, I
performance.
think it, yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of top pianists walk onto the stage with their iPad. Absolutely.
Yeah, and the beauty of it, perhaps its most wonderful aspect, is that it's very discreet. And you don't need an additional person on stage to sort of ruin the theatrical aspect of your performance. It's just you. It's one-on-one with you and the audience, between you and the audience.
That's true. Well, I've never tried it, and I just still can't imagine how you get the foot ready to turn the page when that foot is meant to be pedaling as well.
Especially when you're using the soft pedal, yes. But it's about illusion, I guess.
Yes. No, you're right. I've seen a video of you performing Hexen Sabbat
Ah,
with the iPad. And I have to say, I think another thing I so admire about you is the way your posture, you're so sovereign and on top of it. There's no tossing, moving around, the head flying. Are you very conscious of that, or is that just the way you've been trained? You just seem very composed at the piano.
I think I was probably partly influenced by my dad, who abhorred all kinds of physical display at the keyboard. I mean, my personal feeling is that I must be a little boring to watch, because I don't. Sometimes I think that I don't look involved. But to me, when all's said and done, that's secondary, because I really believe very strongly that you should go to concerts just to experience the music acoustically in the room, as it's being created. And of course, it's easy as an audience member to be influenced by the visual aspect. I mean, if the pianist is looking towards the skies, it can sort of pull us away from the fact that, I mean, it's easy to look at the skies and not really be expressing much musically.
It's very interesting. I think we get into bad habits as well, don't we? I think it can be a hindrance to be to move around too much.
I mean, I don't mean to speak against my colleagues, but I all I can tell you is what works for me, really. I mean, it's the only way I can really concentrate, and I'm not interested in creating a visual persona, that would it wouldn't be me.
No. So, did your father, I mean, he was obviously a big influence on you. I believe when you were very young, he introduced you to repertoire, Alkan, Godovsky.
Yes, but I think he was discovering it at the same time as I was.
Okay. How lovely.
He didn't really know it beforehand. I mean, he was certainly intrigued, but he also had his reservations about this repertoire. I mean, I'm not sure he liked Alcan all that much. Yeah. On the other hand, he absolutely revered Godovsky. And I mean, I actually have a document to prove the fact that I was introduced to the Godovsky Chopin studies as a score, not playing them or anything, when I was 7 years old. Because
Goodness.
that's when he received the scores by mail. They had just been reprinted, and he had been wanting to see them for years because he'd read about them and was really, really intrigued. And finally, they were all there and are reprinted for everyone to see. So I remember it, and we were looking at them together. I mean, I was already, through him, familiar with the Chopin originals,
Yes.
orally and also visually. So we just looked at these scores in a totally bug-eyed.
My goodness. So did your father learn them as well?
He tried, but I mean, I think he tried to play a couple. He practiced a couple of them, certainly, but I think they were really out of reach for him, even though he actually worked on some pretty difficult things. I mean, I have tapes of him, you know, playing at home with large excerpts from things like the Franck Symphonic Variations, for example, or some Liszt, you know. So he was up there. He had perfect pitch. So I think he had a good learning facility as well. And I over the last year or so, I started to make a list of what I remember him practicing or what I am aware that he knew. And the list is pretty impressive, really. But his taste really didn't go into the 20th century very much, with exceptions like the Prokofiev Seventh Sonata, which he really enjoyed.
It's a great piece, but it's very accessible.
But I really had a lot of trouble convincing him of the worth of something like the Charles Ives Concert Sonata, which he sort of, towards the end, reluctantly sort of started to accept.
Yes, okay. Oh, it's so nice that he was obviously a big part of your life.
Oh, well, I don't know whether I would actually be doing this if it hadn't been for him. I probably would have discovered some kind of musical talent, but the nice thing is that through him and through the records that he was always playing at home, and through my mother's even though she had no musical ability, I mean, she often just sang for herself, and she was a great lover of operetta and things like that. She had a real good musical taste. It was a really, really good, a very enviable environment to grow up in. And if I hadn't had that, I would have discovered my aptitudes probably much later, if at all.
I understand that entirely. I mean, obviously, that's amazing. You obviously started learning those Gadowski Chopin etudes when you were about eight.
No. Oh God, no. It wasn't until, God, my late teens maybe, when I even started to think about maybe, working on them,
Wow.
because they scared me just as they scared anybody else, really. But
Yeah.
now, I mean, there's at least four or five recordings of the complete set, so we know that they can be done.
They're amazing. I mean, Mark, how many recordings for Hyperion now? Is it over 90?
Well, at 90, to I think it's 92 total. If I kept accurate track, although I think a couple of dozen of them are for other labels,
Okay.
but the rest are Hyperion.
That's amazing. Such diverse repertoire from Beethoven's Hammerklavier to Bolcom's Rags. I mean, do you always have ideas? You're like, I've got to do this, I've got to do that.
Well, I think my discography speaks for that, really. It speaks to that.
Yeah. And you've got a great record label behind you who say, okay.
I could not have hoped for better, really, because for so many years, and still now, I mean, they give me free rein in exploring what I want to do, and the public's developed a trust in what I do, and that I couldn't have hoped, I couldn't hope for more. So
Yeah.
as long as it sells, they're
Yeah.
gonna let me do it.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. I mean, I've heard you say so much, so wonderful, interesting things here. And so what I'd like to do now is maybe shift to some little light-hearted questions for you that I'd love you to answer off the cuff as they come. Yeah. All right. So the first question, if you could play only one composer from now on, who would it be?
Please consider the infinite breadth of the piano literature. How can you whittle it down to just one person? I mean, I could tell you about many composers that I love. I mean, Schubert, for example, was a relatively late discovery for me, and I don't know why I waited for so long, and or why I just didn't do. I didn't explore him before I did, but that, of course, he's an indispensable. But so is Chopin, so is Beethoven, so is Mozart.
No, I know.
I
It
could
is a
name so
ridiculous
many
question.
people.
It is a crazy question. Although some people do answer and say, and it's usually Bach.
Well, he ain't too bad either.
Very funny. Okay, next question. Oh, where are we? Where are we? Yeah, one pianist, dead or alive, you travel long and far to hear.
Based on the descriptions of his playing, which almost sound too good to be true, I would say Liszt.
Yeah.
Forget the flamboyant aspect of his writing and of his pianism. Apparently, he could play. I mean, he had a great reputation for being the utmost poet at the keyboard. And the emotional impact that he had on his listeners, I would really have loved to experience it myself. And it's really a crying shame that he did not live a few more years to be able to enter the recording era.
Absolutely. Oh dear. Okay. One person, dead or alive, you would like to play for. Doesn't have to be a
List.
musician. Liszt.
I think. Probably for the same reason.
Okay. A question here. I'm sure you'll, I don't know, funny question. Do you have any technical struggles at the piano?
Always. Always. I'm trying to phrase this right. I mean, sometimes, very often actually, getting something to sound like what you think the composer intended entails a great deal of, in my case, refingering. Getting the right kind of the emotional tone. I know what you're asking me, and of course, I always have to work on more mechanically mechanical things, like anybody else, at the piano. I don't like to use the word technique, because technique really encompasses more than just the mechanical. And actually, I once read an article by Horowitz, actually, in which he said that the word technique should not be used, and it should be mechanics, because the technique really
Oh.
encompasses all elements of the musician's art, and whether it be purely mechanical or artistic.
Very interesting indeed. Very interesting. What would be your advice to an amateur pianist about how to improve?
Well, it depends on how far they really want to go, but I've always thought, and this might sound like an oblique answer, but I think it really, really is important. Acquire as good a knowledge of theory as you can. Theory, harmony, counterpoint, analysis, ear training, because they're all building blocks. And I can say that in my case, they definitely had a humongous influence on my playing. The benefits can be subconscious. You might not be conscious of the effect of these things, but I think it's very important to have a good mind for music. And not just let your fingers fly about.
Definitely. I mean, structure, that surely helps the structure of a sonata or a piece.
Because it really helps you know what you're doing, bottom line.
Absolutely. I like that. Finally, one composer you're not quite ready to tackle.
Well, I've done pretty much everything that I wish. I mean, if I want something badly enough, I just get to the grindstone, but whether I've succeeded really musically is another matter. That's for others to judge.
Oh.
There are certain works, perhaps, that I'm intimidated by. One of them, actually, and I'm really being very candid here, is the Chopin Preludes.
Okay.
For some reason that I can't quite define, they scare me. And
Yeah.
I really don't know whether I would be worthy of them.
Wow, you're gonna have
I
to,
mean,
yeah.
yeah. Interestingly, I'm writing my own set of 24 preludes at the moment. I mean, it's a long range project. I mean, it's a commission for 2027. I am trying to distance myself from Chopin as much as possible, or any other composer, really. So we'll see what happens with that, you know. But the Chopin, I'm not sure I would be ready to tackle them at this point. Other
Oh.
Chopin, yes, much more readily. I mean, I've had a very interesting relationship with the Polonaise Fantaisie, for example, in recent years, which I and with the Barcarolle and the Fourth Ballade. I mean, to me, that's the top Chopin. That
Yes.
where he really realized his art, you know, to the highest degree.
I mean that Polonaise
Well,
fantasy.
that's a personal thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that Polonaise fantasy, if you could get that across convincingly. It's a very complex piece, isn't it?
Yeah, and that is a case where a knowledge of the science of music and not just you know, blindly following the score is imperative, because the structure, the sequence of events is very elusive, and holding it together, I think, is a very severe test of the musician's art.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, it's a wonderful piece. Oh, Mark, well, I think we've come to the end. And with the Polonaise Fantasy, it's a beautiful way to end it.
Isn't
It dies away magically. So our conversation will too. Oh, but it's been wonderful having you on this podcast. What are you up to at the moment? I believe you're in a hotel room, obviously waiting to give a concert somewhere.
Yes, I'm in Vancouver, Washington. Not Vancouver, Canada, but Vancouver, Washington. Just across the river, actually. I can see Portland, Oregon, actually, on the other side. I'm next to the hotel's next to a bridge, and we're going to do two Rhapsody in Blues this weekend, and
Sounds
then I
like
go home for just 5 days, unfortunately, and then it's back on the road in Europe. And my first stop is actually recording for Hyperion, and this is going to be a very interesting project, a little bit off the beaten track. Surprise, surprise, It's going to feature the CD is going to feature a composer, a Brazilian composer, who's actually a very major figure over there, but who is practically unknown anywhere else, except maybe to guitarists. And his name is Radames Nhatali, spelled Nhatali. He has worked both in the sort of classical and popular domains. He's written a lot of concert music, concerti, solo concerti, and chamber music, but also has done a lot of popular music, written also, and arranged. And he was a very well-known session pianist. You can find his music is very well represented on YouTube, both live and you know, recordings. The piano music, aside from a few exceptions, has not really been available or even published. So I'm trying to revive interest in his production. And the nice thing is that the music is all available through the Nathalie website, you know. So and it's going to be very attractive, because the CD is going to be slanted much more towards his popular production rather than the concert production. So I'm not saying it's going to be another Kapustin necessarily, you know, but I I think the door should be open towards some of his production because it's really attractive.
Oh, that sounds fascinating. I
It's going
look
to be
forward to it.
I think, a very nice listen.
I look forward to discovering something new then. Yeah.
There's actually a few pieces that ended up on one of the Danakord CDs from the Husum Festival. I played these pieces way back when, but I really didn't know what I was doing back then because I didn't really get any sense of the true Brazilian musical idiom, you know, and everything was too fast, and it sounded more like Art Tatum than anything, you know. So I would scrap that if I could, you know, but it's on CD, so I can't change it.
Okay.
But
Oh.
I since then I've heard a lot more Brazilian music, and I'm much more aware of how it should be.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, Mark, I think we've come to the end of the conversation.
All right.
It's been
It's
a
been very
pleasure.
enjoyable.
Yeah. And I'll let you get some rest now before your performances of Rhapsody in Blue.
Thank you. That's going to be it's always very relaxing, this piece, I find.
Yeah, I'm sure. Oh, well, I wish you all the best for your performances and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Erica. It's been wonderful.
Thank you. That was the finale of Beethoven's Opus 2, No. 3 Sonata, and it was performed by Marc-Andre Hamelin. Pianist podcasts are free, and a really good way to support what we do is by subscribing to Pianist. Visit our website at pianistmagazine.com and listen to us on YouTube by searching Pianist Magazine. And don't forget to sign up to our newsletter, which is full of extra playing tips and useful information. Go to pianistmagazine.com to find out how to sign up.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.